Donald Trump tightens his grip on the GOP as his preferred candidate wins the Ohio Senate primary. Plus, Intel wins the biggest grant yet to build chip factories in the United States, and a head-spinning day in the courts. The Supreme Court allows, then another court blocks, a Texas law that would allow the state to deport non-citizens.
In theory, the federal government is still the only power that can enforce immigration law along the boundary. Who is actually doing what right now? Well, we're trying to find out.
It's Wednesday, March 20th. I'm Peter Granitz for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Luke Vargas. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The immigration rules governing the southern U.S. border have been thrown into disarray this morning after the Supreme Court yesterday allowed Texas to begin arresting and deporting non-citizens on its own, only for an appeals court to step in hours later and block any such efforts. Jess Braven covers the Supreme Court for the Journal, and he joins us now. Jess, I'm sure it was a very busy evening for you, two court rulings seemingly at odds with each other. What have they said?
So this involves a very aggressive Texas law to really take charge of immigration enforcement, something that Texas says the federal government has failed to do. It allows the state government to arrest and deport non-citizens on its own. The U.S. government and some immigrant rights groups went to a federal court asking that this law be blocked, that saying that it was unconstitutional. A federal district court in Austin, Texas, agreed and blocked this law. Texas appealed, and a federal appeals court temporarily allowed the law to go into effect, only to have that ruling stopped by the Supreme Court for several days while it considered the government's next appeal. The Supreme Court on Tuesday said, okay, the law can go into effect. We're not going to intervene in what's going on in the lower court. We're not going to tell the Fifth Circuit what to do about it, so therefore the law can go into effect. Except that a few hours later, the Fifth Circuit changed its mind and said, actually, on second thought, the law cannot go into effect for now. We're going to hold a hearing on it on Wednesday.
So until then, what's the status on the border? Who is controlling immigration between Texas and Mexico right now?
In theory or in reality? In theory, the United States government, the federal government, is still the only power that can enforce immigration law along the boundary. Who is actually doing what right now? Well, we're trying to find out. We have reporters on the scene who are doing their job and trying to figure out what exactly is happening.
Definitely something to watch today. In the meantime, why is this such a legally contentious issue?
Well, it's hard because at the core, there has been gridlock in Washington, D.C. over what to do about immigration. The last time there was a major immigration overhaul was in the 1980s. Since then, there have been some near misses, but the Democrats and the Republicans have not been able to get together about how to handle immigration, and that has led to problems at the border and changes in policy between administrations as they try to work with a relatively old legal framework for a situation that is changing. Some states, particularly conservative-led states along the border, have attempted to take matters into their own hands because they are the front line. They're on the border, so that's where most migrants cross.
And that's counter to what the federal government had wanted. It had tried to block this from going into law in the first place. What's the federal government saying now after these rulings?
Well, the last time that we heard from them, they were criticizing the Supreme Court decision allowing this Texas law to go into effect. They repeated their argument that it's unconstitutional. They say you can't have each state making its own immigration law, and it's going to damage our ability to control the border because foreign governments won't know even who to talk to. It's going to undermine our relations with other countries, particularly Mexico, which is where most of the migrants are coming from. And in fact, as soon as the Supreme Court said Texas's law could go into effect, the Mexican Foreign Ministry said, we are not accepting any deportees from the Texas state government. We don't deal with the Texas state government. We deal with the United States government as a sovereign to sovereign. So that worry certainly came into reality very quickly.
And what has Texas said?
Texas officials said they were pleased with the Supreme Court's decision, but noted that there were still many legal proceedings to come. And those new proceedings came quicker than many of us expected to see.
So what's next? Is this for Congress to fix, or will these Supreme Court rulings be the final law?
Well, there are going to be more proceedings about what happens to this Texas law called SB4, because once the Fifth Circuit takes its next step, the unhappy losing party, whether that is the state of Texas or the Biden administration, can go back to the Supreme Court. They could ask for a rehearing at the Fifth Circuit. There are going to be many more legal steps over this law. The question is whether it is allowed to go into effect before we get a final decision. If it does go into effect, it will be a major, major change in the way immigration rules are enforced in the United States, because if Texas can do it, so can every other state. So it would really create a lot of upheaval in the way immigration is handled in the United States ahead of the November election. That, of course, is what Texas wants to see. They don't like the way it is being done now. They want to upheave it. The federal government, however, says that would only make things worse. The implications, of course, go well beyond the courts. They go into politics, and they go into part of the arguments that both President Biden and his likely Republican challenger, Donald Trump, are making about who has the better approach to enforcing immigration law.
That was Journal Supreme Court reporter Jess Braven. Jess, thanks for getting us up to speed this morning.
You bet.
Bernie Moreno has won the Ohio Senate Republican primary election, the latest evidence that former President Donald Trump has strengthened his control over the GOP.
I wear with honor my endorsement from President Trump. I wear that with a badge of honor. Because under President Trump, this nation was safer. It was more secure. We had prosperity around the world.
Moreno will face Democratic incumbent Sherrod Brown in November. Moreno is a businessman who has not held office before and who dispatched a candidate from the more traditional Republican mold. Matt Dolan was endorsed by Governor Mike DeWine and former Senator Rob Portman, and Dolan had been critical of Trump. Democrats had hoped Moreno would win. A super PAC aligned with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer had spent millions of dollars to boost Moreno's standing with conservatives. The Ohio Senate race is expected to be one of the fall's most competitive. We're exclusively reporting that the European Union is pushing back on efforts to sanction Iran for arming its allied militias in the Middle East. Germany and France had proposed new sanctions on Tehran for its support of Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, and other militias in Iraq and Syria. But as the Journal's Lawrence Norman explains, the EU's top diplomat Josep Borrell says not so fast.
He says particularly now he believes that that could lead to some kind of Iranian retaliation, which could escalate the current conflict in the region over Gaza. And he also says it could undermine diplomacy with Iran on nuclear issues and other issues.
EU officials say the United States supports Borrell's decision to slow the effort. The issue will come up tomorrow and Friday when EU ministers gather in Brussels for a council meeting. Coming up, Samsung shares rally on reports NVIDIA is looking to buy some of its next-generation chips, plus Elon Musk's struggle to lure content creators to social media platform X. We've got those stories and more after the break.
Join the Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
The AI hype is showing no signs of abating, with Korean tech giant Samsung this morning rallying on reports that NVIDIA is looking to buy some of its next generation chips. It comes after NVIDIA shares posted a gain yesterday when reporters managed to eke out price estimates for the AI giant's new chips. Here's our deputy finance editor for Europe, Quentin Webb.
So each of these so-called Blackwell chips might cost between $30,000 and $40,000. But previously, we'd heard estimates of $50,000. And put that in context, the current chips known as Hoppers, the H100, costs about $25,000 a piece. So Jensen Huang said he wants to make the widest possible group of clients be able to afford these chips. I mean, remember that the AI hype has already buoyed NVIDIA shares a lot, and it's filtering through to other parts of the global market. Samsung is a little bit behind some of its rivals, such as SK Hynix, but this is seen as confirmation that it's likely to catch up a bit. And, you know, if you look, for example, at the Japanese stock market, which has done very well recently, a lot of the biggest drivers there have been semiconductor companies or semiconductor equipment companies. A lot of that is related to AI enthusiasm.
Samsung has declined to comment on a possible supply deal with NVIDIA. In other chip news, the U.S. government is granting Intel the largest award yet from the $53 billion CHIPS Act. Up to $8.5 billion will go toward new factories and expansion projects in the four states of Arizona, New Mexico, Ohio, and Oregon in a bid to revive American chipmaking. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo said the Intel investments will put the U.S. on track to producing 20% of the world's leading-edge chips by the end of the decade. Recently, much of the world's chip production has shifted to Asia, leaving the U.S. with around 12% of the world's manufacturing in 2020. Meanwhile, Elon Musk's plans to boost content creator revenue on X are falling flat. The platform, formerly known as Twitter, is competing with the likes of TikTok and YouTube, whose viral content attracts big advertisers. Alexa Course covers X for the Journal and told our Tech News Briefing podcast how some creators are left questioning Musk's strategy.
X has been trying different efforts, different products over the past months, but creators say that it's not really still clear to them how that translates to revenue or a sustainable business. One creator told me advertisers are the foundation of the creator economy. And if X is going to offer to share advertising revenue, the question is, how much are advertisers going to be spending? And we know X has been struggling to attract advertisers, especially these big name brands who are nervous about Musk changes and changes to content rules and other changes he's made to the platform.
And you can hear more about X's struggles to attract content creators on today's Tech News Briefing podcast. The U.S. has dropped 8 places in the annual World Happiness Report, falling from 15th place to 23rd. Claire Ansberry writes the Turning Points column for the Journal. She says the drop is in large part because of unhappiness among younger Americans.
So young people are sadder for several reasons, and a key one is loneliness. They spend less time interacting with people in person and don't feel as connected as they used to their jobs or other institutions like churches. And they're also worried about money, about being able to find affordable housing and buy groceries and global issues like the war in the Middle East and climate change.
It is the first time the U.S. is not among the top 20 happiest countries since the global ranking began in 2012. Afghanistan is still the unhappiest country in the world, while Nordic countries dominate the top 10, with Finland at the very top. And finally, the first games of the NCAA tournament have begun. This year's March Madness gets underway amid a push for unionization in college sports, most recently at Dartmouth. What questions do you have about that and what it means for colleges, athletes, and sports in general? Send us a note, or even better, record a voice memo on your phone and send it to wnpod@wsj.com. That is wnpod@wsj.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 212-416-4328. Just be sure to include your name and location because we might use it on the show. And that's what's news for Wednesday morning. Today's show was produced by Hattie Moya and Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kielhoff. And I'm Peter Granitz for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Luke Vargas. We'll be back tonight with a new show. Until then, thanks for listening.